You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to Here District. Marcus Johnson, the captain of this vessel, this fantastic voyage, joined by my son, Chris, the first mate and the only father and son tandem to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA, 1975-1995. We are.
Dang.
Man, we got some...
We old, bro. That's what we are.
Well, we are old, but we've got some heavy hitters joining us today. I mean, the heaviest of hitters. Dave McMiniman, NBA reporter for ESPN since 2009, primarily covering the Lakers. A lot of my LA guys are commiserating right now, man. They are in such a deep funk right now.
So mad.
But co-author of a best-selling book, Return of the King, LeBron James, The Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Greatest Comeback in NBA History with Brian Windhorst. He was a student manager at Syracuse. That was the Carmelo year, right? Was that the
That's right.
2003, yes, New Orleans, mm-hmm. Louisiana. I was down there, covered it for Fox Sports. Excellent. Played basketball at the University of Limerick. There once was a baller named Dave. His jump shot was all the rave. No, yes. at Limerick University in Ireland while studying abroad. Okay. Dave McMiniman, welcome. And then also Jamal Collier, who I've gotten to know a little bit this season as he's covered the Midwest region for ESPN, the Bucks, the Pacers, the Bulls, and the Wolves since 2021. He's also a former beat writer for the Chicago Tribune and a graduate of the Fighting Illini. Where's that at? In Champaign, Urbana? What do they call that area? What is that?
Yeah, it is not as beautiful as Ireland, I'm sure, in Limerick. I think they've had me beat there, man.
But listen, guys, so we got, you know, we thank you so much, both of you guys, for joining us. And so we're just going to jump right into it. You know, the talk of the day, everybody has always, this time of year, speculating about Giannis and what Giannis is going to do. And you guys just fill me in on what your take is and what you think, what you see on the horizon. Dave, go ahead. You start out.
Listen, I covered Kobe Bryant for 6 years in Los Angeles. He played 20 seasons with the Los Angeles Lakers. There were times when he went on national TV and said, I'd rather play on Pluto than play for the Lakers. And guess what? He never played for any other team. There are moments where a team... We're a player. They're going to go through frustrations. But if you look at the whole of what he's been able to accomplish in Milwaukee, Giannis has, the multiple MVPs, the championship, the finals MVP, becoming a world-class icon, and certainly having a franchise that values him and his input when it comes to player personnel decisions, when it comes to coaching decisions. You know, all those things can't be taken for granted. And quite frankly, he's not in a position where he needs to feel the urgency to go chase a ring somewhere else because he's already proven it, that he did it himself with the team where he started his career. So I know we are accustomed to the conversation with superstars in this league being, well, it's not going well here. What's the next stop they're going to demand to go to? And there's been, you know, a half dozen superstars that have followed that route over the last 10 years. But just because that's happened with those other guys doesn't mean it's going to be the Giannis Antetokounmpo story. Yeah. And that's all I wanted to, you know, kind of remind NBA fans of this week when I did Rich Eisen's show.
Speaking of far-fetched with Kobe, there was even some talk about him joining the Clippers. I mean, we can take it a step beyond Pluto. But Jamal, yeah. Now you talk about how the reports that Giannis is happy. There's also that analysis with his brother Thanasis podcast about I need a second championship. If I don't get a second championship, will I feel good about myself? I doubt it. I mean, so what's your feeling about everything that's going on right now?
Yeah, and I think to Dave's point, the reason, you know, that this is a topic is one, because we've seen this follow a superstar pattern in the past. But the other big part of it is for Giannis's own words. You know, every 6 months, for sure, yearly or so, we sort of hear him be very vocal about the fact that he wants to win and win at a high level and win another championship. And that has always been the focus for him. And I think why this is a conversation at this particular moment is that the playoff series against Indiana, and really probably the past 2 years, but especially the playoff series, lay bare that the Bucks right now, they're just a gap between them and the real contenders in the East and in the rest of the league. So kind of this sort of a crossroads situation for Giannis a little bit this offseason, the way I see it, that now he sort of is faced with, okay, a championship in Milwaukee is going to be difficult here in the short-term future. They're going to have to sort of take some steps to rebuild this thing up and get it there. And is this a place where in his prime, he's willing to sort of go through that, the pains of rebuilding that? Now, again, you know, as I reported and really think the thing that's a lot of people miss just looking at Giannis from the outside, he's a very loyal person. Yeah. He has doubled down and tripled down on Milwaukee with every single chance he's had. He's signed an extension here. He does like playing here. He really likes playing for Doc Rivers. He trusts John Horst in the front office. And there's a lot of advantages that I think that I know that he enjoys playing about Milwaukee. So anybody thinks that he's got a foot out the door and will leave this situation lightly if and when that day has come, that is certainly not how I see it. But I think for Giannis, the way the season ended, the way the Bucks, particularly without Dame, and obviously Dame because of the injuries is a big question mark for next year. You know, Giannis has to sort of, I think, sit with that a little bit after the season and really sort of decide this is what's going to be the pass forward. Even though I'm in my prime, was putting up 30-point triple doubles and really, really sort of putting it all out there on the floor for this playoffs, it didn't matter. It didn't make a big difference. And that's the first time in these past 2 years we've seen Giannis on the floor performing at that level, it really not make any kind of playoff difference.
Jamal, what are your thoughts, or what's your read on just Giannis's trust of John Horst? You mentioned it. How much does he trust him, and what type of job does John Horst have to do to convince Giannis that a rebuilding year is something that, you know, he's going to be agreeable to?
Yeah, you know, I think Giannis is a guy who, you know, just frankly doesn't spend that much time sort of doing the other people's jobs in the organization, right? Like, he's sort of focused on competing and doing everything he can. Giannis been the GM for now for virtually like this entire contending run for Giannis and almost his entire career in Milwaukee. I think he's seen the steps that the Bucks have taken. You know, every time this sort of Giannis starts making a little bit of noise or you know, this conversation comes up, right? The Jrue Holiday trade, the Dame Lillard trade. These are both trades that Giannis, you know, signed extensions after and was very happy about the state of the team. So I think he has a trust level in John is what I'm saying. And those guys have a good long-standing relationship that continues even to this day. So, you know, I think Giannis is a guy who, again, guys he's familiar with, people he's loyal to and trust. And I think John is certainly one of those people that Giannis has faith in. I think he also is a guy who can read the room and look at sort of what the Bucks' difficult situation is, that John has been able to sort of pull a rabbit out of his hat these last couple of times, but it's just only becoming harder once you compete for this long through these many NBA cycles. You spend all the draft picks, you just do all the things the Bucks have done. Now it's just going to be harder. And I think the Bucks have to maybe find a creative plan to figure out how to sort of get themselves back into contention.
Dave, is there another rabbit left in that John Horst hat to appease Giannis and assuage his desires to win that second championship? I mean, with everything that's going on in the CBA and all that hamstrung second apron talk and all that, I mean, what's your take on that?
It's obviously going to be difficult. And I think part of the reason why you've seen someone like LeBron, for instance, make his moves was his recognition that you're going to exhaust all of your assets and your avenues for improvement over probably a 5 or 6 year span, unless you have a core that are also ascending. You know, like obviously there's a long window ahead of the OKC Thunder right now, because not only the draft picks that they have, but all of those guys are like 25 years or younger, and they're just going to get better year after year. Houston's in a similar boat with some of their young core. At the same time, though, look at the Detroit this year, right? They triple their wins, in large part because they were able to sign Malik Beasley to a minimum contract, and he has a great year. And so there are players like Malik Beasley that, or you know, Norm Powell for the Clippers this year, that you get the right player in the right situation, and they outperform their contracts, and that's going to have to be what the Bucks are able to identify, and certainly, you know, Giannis could be someone who recruits in that aspect, convincing a guy that, no, you come here, play for the minimum. We're going to do special things together.
That Gary Trent highlight reel will go pretty far.
Gary Trent sprang to mind when you mentioned outperforming the contract. Now, we had Eric Name on one of our recent episodes, and he talked about maybe trying to present Giannis with a package of MVP possibilities by maybe averaging close to a triple-double. I mean, he's almost 7 assists a game this year.
Point Giannis.
I mean, just from what you know of Giannis from afar, I mean, is that something that you think he'd buy into while they try and get the assets that they need to take this thing back up to the elite level?
I'll defer to Eric because I know, you know, he's covered virtually Giannis's entire career. And so I think he speaks from a position of authority to offer that up. Listen, I think you need to do something to engage your superstar while other things are occurring. Like, again, I'll go back to the LeBron example. The year the Lakers had in 21-22, where it was really rough and they signed all these veterans who didn't pan out, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Rajon Rondo, they had traded for Russell Westbrook. In the meantime, Frank Vogel played LeBron at point center and opened up the offense for him. And LeBron averaged 30 points for the first time in almost 10 years. And it kept him engaged. Okay. And so that could be a pathway to keep Giannis engaged during the regular season to buy John Horst some time to get this team back to contending status.
And to that point, you know, Giannis mentioned after the end of the season, you know, he sort of looked at, you know, that last 11 games they had without Dame, but especially they had the 8-game winning streak at the end of the season. That's how they played. They sort of put shooters around. It was how they played in the playoffs when Dame went out as well in that game 5 against Indiana, that, you know, they just surrounded Giannis with shooting. They allowed him to be the point guard, bring the ball off the floor. He did seem to really enjoy that and mentioned it after the playoff loss about that sort of being the next evolution of his game. And he pointed to a guy like LeBron James and the ways he's able to impact winning. So I do think that, you know, to Dave's point, that is a way that the Bucks could potentially engage him and potentially get him to, you know, still be working. Giannis is a guy who's always improving. We've seen that through these years, and he comes back with a new skill and a new, you know, tool in his game every year. And if that can be the focus for now, and he can see how that builds him and helps him become even a better playoff player. You know, we saw it this year with that mid-range shot that he was able to sort of add into his game. And he was sort of thinking about it for an eye for the playoffs. So I think those are just great points by Dave again, that, you know, there's other ways here for the Bucks. And I think, you know, to continue to engage Giannis and not necessarily feel like they have to go make some kind of home run swing right now, if they sort of sell him on a longer plan of this is our vision to get us back to contention.
Dave, both teams lose series in 5 games, but there's different vibes between the two. I mean, Dame Lillard being out, obviously, and what happened with the Bucks. But what is the vibe in L.A., and where do you see this kind of headed right now? Is it what's the overall vibe in terms of losing to the Timberwolves the way they did?
Yeah, well, Marcus, I'm actually covering the second round in Minneapolis, covering the Wolves for ESPN. And so it's given me an occasion to reach out to some Lakers sources and then just kind of Monday morning quarterback that series, especially because, you know, the Wolves lose game 1. They don't play particularly well. Most of the folks that I spoke to on the coaching staff, in the organization, even spoke to some players after game 5 ended, it was the general consensus that we lost to the better team. But I think as you step away from it, you know, the Lakers, LeBron spoke about this on his podcast with Steve Nash. It was really close. Games 3 through 5 all could have been had. You know, you could second guess J.J. Redick's decision to only go with the same 5 guys in the second half of game 4. But LeBron James publicly endorsed him and said that we were all behind that. We understood what he was doing. He said Gabe Vincent, Jared Vanderbilt weren't happy about it because they're competitors, but they also weren't against the idea of trusting our coach trying to do whatever he can to win. Listen, if Luka Doncic doesn't get food poisoning for game 3, if the referees get the call right and there's tripping foul on Jaden McDaniels in game 4, you know, maybe the Lakers are up 3-1 and they're still here fighting the Golden State Warriors in the second round. And so anytime you have a team that wins 50 games, gets the number three seed, has home court, and falls out in the first round, there's a degree of disappointment. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think everyone's caught their breath a little bit. They look back at the sprint from February 2nd to the end of the first round after they acquired Luka Doncic, and they say, we have some ways to get this team better. Clearly got to address the center position. If we do that and have a training camp and have, you know, Luka have the benefit of an offseason to fully recover from that calf strain that sidelined him, that was the longest injury he's had in his NBA career, missing 6 weeks straight, that we have a good reason to believe that we can contend again next year. So it's a pretty positive group, despite, you know, kind of kicking themselves saying the what if game.
Mm-hmm. Quick question on Bronny, Dave. What does he need to do to become a reliable NBA player?
Yeah, you know, Chris, he's still, I believe, 21 years old. And so he is just developing as a person, let alone a basketball player. He admitted that confidence was an issue for him. And you could see it certainly in the preseason last year, somewhat in summer league last year. And the way he pushed through that, you know, and it's not like he could go off somewhere, you know, in the shadows and do his work. It was a spotlight every single moment. And he found a way to push through it and had a very successful G League season. Like averaged 21 points per game on good shooting percentages. Certainly his outside shot needs work because he's going to have to consistently hit the three to get minutes with this group, especially with Luka and LeBron being able to, you know, spread the ball out to shooters. And then he needs to bring that, just that he's an elite athlete, but his motor isn't always in your face. And he just needs to amp his motor a little bit, because when he uses his athleticism to hawk the ball, to get in the passing lanes, to go take a charge, have a chase down block, like, he can really impact the game defensively too. So once he feels the comfort factor of being able to go all out on defense, and some of that, quite frankly, is conditioning, and he's coming back from a heart attack. Like yeah. We need to recognize that. Like, he's seriously, a 21-year-old yeah. kid coming back from a heart attack.
Seriously.
And so if you get the conditioning to go all out on defense and then continue to improve his shot, because his shot form is quite good. It's yeah. just he needs to get the reps in. You know, I think he could be a rotation player, you know, maybe by midseason next year if he continues this trajectory.
I was at the NBA combine last year before Bronny got drafted. And Dave, talking to people at that point about Bronny and a few different check-ins throughout the season, they echoed the same thing. They said, look, the problem with Bronny is that he hasn't had a lot of game experience. He obviously, you know, with what happened with the heart issue that took away those times at USC, and they were like, get this guy in the G League, allow him to sort of get used to the NBA speed of it. And that was the part of it is that, like, just to be impactful in games a little bit more often, I think, and figure out a way to use, because he's got some skills and some tools, especially on the defensive end, you know, use that. We saw it in spurts there. Obviously, Dave, you saw it, you know, more closely than us, but, you know, people, I think, saw throughout the course of this season that he, when he gets some time into play at the other people around his, you know, level, his draft class and stuff, he stood out. You know, he had some moments in there where you saw the tools in there that, again, you get him in there at 21, you trust the IQ and that basketball background that he's have and the skills to be able to develop, that you could see the rotation player in there. And, you know, the Lakers, I think, are probably pretty happy with what they saw, I would think, that first year.
Well, and Dave, we know the Stephen A. Smith, LeBron, little kerfuffle that they had, but from your observations, I mean, has LeBron allowed Bronny to grow on his own? Has he been the protective dad? Is he kind of listening in to any kind of an interview or question session that he may be having in the locker room? I mean, what's that been like watching that dynamic from the inside?
I think certainly the things that LeBron can control, he has been wonderful with his son. But LeBron can't control the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, the speculation, the attention, the social media that comes with him being who he is. And so obviously that's a tough situation for Bronny to deal with constantly. At the same time, he handled it with grace. And, you know, LeBron is not like hovering around him, like on the road, you know, trying to get every dinner with him. You know, he understands that he's a 21-year-old kid who's you know, as a girlfriend that he wants to FaceTime, you know, from his hotel room, and who is wants to play different video games than LeBron might want to just play Madden, and he's playing Fortnite or whatever it is. And so, like, they're not, it's not like frickin' frack. I think it's actually a pretty healthy relationship that they have. They're much like, you know, you and Chris and you and Josiah, you know, and you're not all up in their business every moment, Marcus, you know, but you are there as a someone who can guide them, who knows the business, who is a valuable resource, but you're not, you know, not attached at the hip.
And we were there for that game in March when he had the career high. It's funny, a neighborhood barbershop I was at today. That's where I got the clean lineup right there.
Okay, I see.
Peace Barbershop, 79th and Western. But they got a running bet, Greg, the main barber who owns the shop, that he said that Bronny would score 20. This year, and so he bet the other guy, Richard, in the shop, and he got close. He got the, you know, I was hoping he'd get that seven, but he showed me, you know, just in that one, and of course, I mean, it was like the South Bay Lakers. I think I jokingly referred to them because they had so many guys injured, six guys hurt, and nobody played. But at the same time, I mean, you could see that there was something there, and that's all you want to see at this stage, as you mentioned, as a 21-year-old coming off a heart attack. Yeah. Jamal. For the Bucks, you know, small market team. Now the CBA, I don't want to get all in the weeds with it and get overly analytical on the CBA, but can you explain to our listeners just how that's supposed to have evened the playing field a bit? And is it working out in your mind? You think the Bucks can use that as any kind of leverage this offseason?
Yeah, the problem with the Bucks as far as leverage this offseason is that, for all intents and purposes, the Bucks right now are one of the superpower teams just because they've been so good for so long, and they've used up all of their their resources, basically your draft picks. You've traded young players. You've been over the salary cap paying luxury tax for a while. So part of the benefit, you know, and the Chris Bilson for Kyle Kuzma trade will be debated, you know, in Milwaukee for a while. But some of the benefit of that, I think, I know from Milwaukee, is that they were out of that second apron that really just locks you into basically this is your team and you can't do anything outside of a one-for-one trade. Now they've got flexibility going to this offseason. They've got just different avenues. And, you know, the theory with this CBA is it's supposed to create parity, supposed to give not an undue advantage to the, you know, the Lakers of the world, that they just won't get called up and get a 21-year-old superstar in the middle of the night. But that still happens.
How about 25-year-old superstar?
25-year-old, yeah, there you go. but, you know, in theory, it's supposed to sort of level the playing field out, give teams that are in smaller markets a chance to retain their superstars, retain their players, because they can pay them pretty much a lot more money than everybody else. And, you know, that's the theory behind it. I think we still, in practice, you know, it feels like for both sides, it handicaps teams in some ways, it's handicapped players in some ways. You know, I'm curious to see how the next CBA goes and sort of builds off of this one already, because it's made for some fun basketball. We've had some fun playoffs so far, but it has made it. I do not envy teams right now trying to build and figure out ways to keep building your team around it right now.
Speaking of the playoffs, man, road teams during this playoffs, 25-23, they all won all 4-1 game one of their series. Dave, what's up with this? Why are they thriving? What's going on? What is this? What is it?
I mean, I think the one commonality we can say, certainly in the second round, is quite frankly, missed free throws by the home team and 3-point shooting from the road team. And, you know, the 3-point shooting has been a huge factor in the league over the last 15 years or so. Obviously, this nothing new. It just, I think that confluence of events. And then obviously some players, you know, missing, you know, the Cavs injuries. Yeah. Obviously affected things. Boston with Kristaps Porzingis not being himself so far this series, that affected things. But I think there's probably a level of you are going to get your best effort on the road in some sense from the visiting team, because they are going into it with their kind of nerves racked already, recognizing that I got to be on high alert and fight or flight, and then you're going to give kind of an extra ounce of energy that maybe you, when you have the comfort at home, you're not going to find. And I think that has been a factor too. And that's hard to like actually quantify how much that's affected things, but certainly seeing the Wolves, who, you know, I've seen them now in the first round and the second round, you know, they looked like a different team in LA than they did in the confines of the Target Center.
Yeah.
And Jamal, the Pacer juggernaut. Good,
go ahead. I just going to quick thing to add to that is that I think, you know, the margins between these teams right now are so small. I think despite, you know, especially in the Western Conference where the six and the seven seed are playing in the second round, you know, the seeding, I think almost this playoffs, especially, kind of has been thrown out the window. And even in the East, the two lower seeds, the Knicks and the Pacers, those are teams with a lot of experience. The Knicks have been through playoff runs together. The Pacers, they've talked about it. They think they won maybe one or two road games all going to the conference finals last year. And they've already won three road games, so far. And it's just, and they just talked about it, having that experience going to Madison Square Garden for a game seven, you know, having to play in Milwaukee in that environment. It just, they have done it now before. And I think that's what you're seeing. Even though this Pacers run continuing and going the way it is, you know, it's from a guy who's seen it now for 2 years. They're a solid and a good team, but it's still surprising me the way they keep pulling that magic out. It seems every night that you know, 2 comebacks of down three possessions with 40 seconds to go is like, you know, just been unheard of.
Been crazy.
Hallie.
And Dave, I want to finish up on this with you. We talked about that 25-year-old superstar falling into your lap, Luca. And I got to give credit to Chris. Chris pulled my coat to him when he was 17, 18 years old about this, you know, and I'm watching him play. I'm watching videos. I'm not seeing it. I don't see it translating into NBA, into NBA greatness. I see, you know, a solid player, but
it
not
was hard
NBA.
To see. It was hard to see back then.
We like, Dad, he was MVP of this EuroLeague. But social media, my basketball heads in LA, I mean, they're killing him. You know, no defense and this and that, the hookah and that. Hey, I know. I mean, all the things that hookah. Too much hookah, too much beer. This. He's a grown man that got his team to the NBA Finals last year.
With all
that being said, but what's just watching, observing, talking to people? What's the feeling about Luka out in Los Angeles in your mind?
Well, I mean, I'll say this: I covered him for 21 games of the regular season. I think he played, and then five more in the playoffs. So I'm still getting to know the guy, getting to know the player. You know, obviously, I watched all of his playoff games basically in his time with Dallas, but you know, not a ton of his regular season games because I'm always, you know, with the Lakers. His skill level is through the roof. And it's because of that skill level that he gets some criticism, because it's like you see the greatness in him, and can he do the things to get out of his own way? If he gets a turnover and he thinks he's fouled, can you just get back on defense rather than complain to the referee so his teammates don't have to deal with a 4-on-3 or 3-on-2 break on the other end? Like, that happens somewhat frequently, and it's a detriment to his game, and it's actually not serving how great he is. And so that's something that you can reel in. You know, being in shape, I mean, listen, he played more minutes than any other player in the entire NBA last year, between the regular season and postseason. So it's hard to say that guy wasn't in shape, because clearly his body was able to perform more than anybody else. However, he can get to another level. I mean, I think he would admit it. J.J. Redick, that was his message going into the offseason. He said, we got to get our team, without saying Luka by name, but he said, we got to get our team in championship shape this offseason. And, you know, listen, he's going to play for the Slovenian national team this summer, like, which is a testament to not only his love of basketball, which he does love basketball, which is a really, I think, a huge factor with a guy actually reaching their potential, because this can be very monotonous, and you got to have something inside you that tells you that this is still the thing I want to be doing more than anything else, even when I'm sitting on piles and piles of money and I have, you know, all the other amenities you could possibly want in this world. I still care about that 94x50 hardwood and the 29.5-inch round sphere in my hand. He has that. And then, obviously, he's going to be in great rhythm and in great shape coming into the season, coming off the EuroBasket play. So he's built for Los Angeles, in my opinion. He has that big game ability. Yeah. His game going back to Dallas was tremendous. It's one of the most special regular season performances I've ever seen. I've been coming to the league for close to 20 seasons. And you know, give him a vertical lob threat, man. I think they're going to win a lot of games in LA next year.
I thought Luka did two very smart things to endear himself to the LA Lakers community. He paid for parking. I don't know if you remember that day.
He
covered the parking. And then someone defamed the Kobe and Gigi mural, and he paid to get that fixed up and done. Those are the type of moves, man, that just he's going to have a long leash, I think, in LA fans. Guys might be hard on him now, but this summer's going to be huge. I heard he's already back in Slovenia, as a matter of fact. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to look like next season, too.
And Dave, we'll end it on this. You think JJ has found a newfound appreciation for Doc Rivers and coaching in the NBA and some of the challenges that he...
That's a great question. I don't know if JJ, his pride would ever allow him to admit that publicly, but for sure, I think he's recognized that you can be the brightest basketball mind, and he certainly has one of the sharper brains of any guys I've been around. But there are so many factors that you got to consider, and there's only so many things you can control too. Like you can't put the ball in the basket for your team, and certainly we saw that the Lakers have some dry spells on offense in the postseason. So yeah, I think so. I think he hasn't lost his competitive fire whatsoever, but he might have just a little bit more humility today than he did before he coached a game for the Lakers. So I think it will serve him in the long run.
All right, good enough. All right, guys, Dave McMenamin and Jamal Collier, two fantastic reporters for ESPN. We thank you for joining here, District Man, and hopefully we'll get you back as things progress during this offseason. Thank you, guys.
Sounds great.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate
Thanks a lot, guys.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.